It's Comedy at the Carlson Cast with your host, Vinny Paulino. Sitting next to him, as always, is Brian Ball. I am the completely flame-retarded Nick Levasseur, and tonight we've got Jim Florentine. Let's send it back over to Vinny.
We'll see you next time. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Carlson Cast. I'm your host, Vinny Paulino. As always, I'm joined by my good pal, Brian Ball. Good morning,
Morning, Vinny.
Hi, guys.
Morning.
Hi, guys.
Hi. I'm just freaking out this morning. We've had so many technical problems the last 2 weeks, but we're getting there. You know, we can't blame it all on the flame retardant kid.
There we go. Wrong button. Sorry about that.
And
I'm
it's
the worst.
An early one. Yeah. It's an early morning.
I could blame him not switching properly.
That's on me.
That is definitely on him. It's going to be a cool show today. We had a good one last week with Phil Hanley, but this week we welcome in the studio a personal favorite of mine, Mr. Jim Florentine.
What?
Yeah, very excited about that. I am a big fan of Jim. I think that what he does is not easy, and he makes it look very easy because he's more of a sociology professor, I think. He looks at the little things.
Fair to say.
He looks at the little things in the world and the little things that society does, and boy, does it just freak him out.
And he's been doing it a long time in lots and lots and lots of places.
Yeah, and he's had a very interesting career. Very interesting career. So a lot to talk about there. Nick, how are you doing, bud?
I am doing just dandy.
Your green screen looks fantastic.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. What does that say behind you?
Happy New Year 2001. I'm starting over, man.
You're just gonna. That's not how time works.
30 going on 13. That's what's happening right now.
You've watched too much Doctor Who. That's not how time works.
I'm just like Jennifer Garner.
You can't just go back and start over again.
Not true. Jennifer Garner could be set on fire.
That is true. That's the main difference between you and I.
Not that I recommend it.
Not for lack of trying.
I would also like to add, he's probably not immortal. I would also like to
probably
throw that on
immortal,
there.
Probably not immortal, no.
No.
Yeah. So let's take a second and talk about our sponsors. Because we got some good ones.
We do.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we go. Let's start with Iron Smoke Whiskey, baby. My favorite whiskey. Mm. Made right here in wonderful Fairport, New York. Distilled with love and care. And available in two different varieties, Applewood Smoked Whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey.
The last thing you want in your whiskey is hate.
That's true. The whiskey either does one or two things. It either fans the flames of hate or
calms and soothes them, like Enya.
Or Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, on fire.
Flaming Jennifer Garner.
The name of this episode. IronSmokeWhiskey.com, baby. And we had a really cool holiday party here for Badrip the other night at Comedy at the Carlson. And Sapori
catered it.
Knocked it out of the park.
I didn't want to leave.
No, it was so good.
It really was good. Chef Joe hits it out of the park. Bacon wraps, scallops. What else they have?
Did you guys
chicken
have the
French.
Desserts?
No, desserts. I didn't get to.
You know
to.
How many cookies this fat boy ate?
They had cookies. And
I ate some cookies.
Cheesecake brownies.
What?
Oh, it was amazing.
It was definitely a spectacle. And you could try some Sapori for your very self. If you go to the Powers Building Atrium, the Tennis Club of Rochester, or you could have them cater your very special event. Trust me, you will not be disappointed.
Yes.
You could also, you know, if you're lazy like me, order on Grubhub. Grubhub, baby.
Nice man will come and deliver it to your house.
Yes,
and if you write in the little note, like, I'll give you an extra $5, if you just come in and feed it to me, sometimes they will.
Solid tip. At Sapori Rochester, and don't forget, Sapori, it's Italian for flavor.
Is it?
Flavore.
It is Italian for flavor. That's what the word means.
Oh.
You nika poops.
I can't read.
No fooling.
I'm not functionally literate.
You can't work
literate.
A chroma key either, kid. Three Heads Brewing, baby, one of my favorites. We always have a variety of Three Heads beer on tap here at the Carlson. This week we have Giant Panda. We've got, I believe, Rochester Farin and The Kind.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All three very delicious.
Oh, delicious.
If you're coming to see Jim Florentine and you're going to have a beer.
All three will get the job done.
Uh-huh.
And if you like music, you should probably mosey on over to Three Heads Brewing on Facebook or threeheadsbrewing.com. because at their brewery every night, just about every night of the week, they have musical acts, like amazing musical acts. They have some incredible performers doing residencies.
Yeah.
For a month at a time. Like, it's just some interesting stuff.
And they know, like, every great musician in the area.
And, you know, Jeff Dale is a musician.
Yeah.
One of the three heads.
Yeah.
The biggest one with the dumbest, smelliest beard.
I'm still going to say my favorite head.
Your favorite? Ugh. What a distinction. What a distinction. My favorite head is that big giant one that was in that episode of The End of the World on Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
That was my favorite.
The face of Bo.
Yeah. I knew I get an audience for that one in this room. Two dorks.
Yeah.
And last but not least, hey, Nick.
Yep.
How's your vape dripping?
Bad, but like in the Michael Jackson sense, so it's good.
Get the pizza.
Ah.
Get the pizza.
Shimona. BadDripLabs.com.
Grab my crotch.
Must be over 18, but let me tell you something about Bad Drip. Premium e-liquids made right here in Rochester, New York, and shipped all over the world.
Everywhere.
If you're going to go pick up some juice for your vape, try making it a Bad Drip day. You know, try it out.
And they can put on a party.
They can definitely put on a party. They hired Sapori, like smart people.
Yeah.
If they put that kind of love and care into their parties, think about what they put into their products.
Wow, that was an excellent segue, Vinny.
Well, I'm pretty good at what I do on occasion.
You nailed it.
Not really. Never mind. I'm not the best. But hey, Nick.
Yeah.
What do you have in your vape? What do you got in there right now?
Right now, I've got Farley's Gnarly Sauce, and I'm pretty happy with it. It's good stuff. I've been meaning to check out Clown because I guess that's their other company, and all that stuff sounds really good too.
And look at that. There's a lovely display of it right behind.
Ba-na-na-na.
Ooh la la.
Aww.
So we'll be back with Jim Florentine in just a few minutes after these words from our good friends at Bad Drip.
Be sure to give us a like on Facebook and also hop over to Twitter and follow us there at Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I think that's what you do on Twitter. I'm not quite sure. Legally, I'm not allowed to have a phone. But we're going to send it back over to Vinny Paulino.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We are joined this morning by one of my favorite comedians, Mr. Jim Florentine. Good morning, Jim.
It's funny because I watched the last 3 weeks of the show, and Vinny said that about every comic that's come in here. So
I didn't say that about Phil Hanley.
No, I think you did. I remember in the beginning of the show you said that.
No, I didn't say that about him.
You sure?
I would go back and watch it. I'd almost put money on it.
Vinny's lying.
I said that about him for sure.
The week before you said
there's a couple people I like, but legitimately, we have really people that I like in here. There's not a lot of the guests that I don't.
I'm just fucking around.
If you'd like to know which ones I don't
like.
No, I
know Vinny for a while. So
yeah, like, you guys have a history.
That's my weird way of showing affection is busting balls. So. Yeah.
Welcome to the couch.
I remember the first words you said to me were, oh, you're that guy who took a shit in a field.
Who said that?
You said that to me because Vinny told you a story about me.
Oh.
And I said, hi, it's nice to meet you, Jim. And you said, oh, you're that guy that took a shit.
Yeah,
in the field.
Instead of going, that really happened. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, I like this guy.
Yeah.
I don't remember that story, though.
I made him get, we were driving back. We did a run of gigs. And he was just sitting there complaining like an old man with his sour stomach. And it was like 2 a.m. driving through the hills of Pennsylvania. And all I'm hearing is this guy. And finally, I was just like, get out of the car. It was pitch black. Get out of the car. And I made him shit in the field. It was pretty fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It was a great night.
What'd you wipe with?
I always carry wet wipes with me because I'm that guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, we were coming back from Florida. I had my whole bag and stuff with me.
Right,
so
okay.
I had all my accoutrement.
Right.
Yeah. So, way to make everything about you. This is good. I like it when you do that with the show. We have a good guest come in. You're like, Let's talk about me shitting in a field because that's more interesting than interviewing
that
Jim Florentine.
No, it is. It's very interesting.
Jim, tell us about all the weird places you've had to take a shit, would you? That's first question.
I've done it in a urinal before.
Oh, wow.
At my friend's wedding.
It's you.
I nice. In the bathroom. Yeah, I left a big, because I knew it was going to be a log, so I just a quick log, and I just left it in the urinal at a wedding. People come to me, oh my God, somebody took a shit in the urinal. I'm like, who would do that?
Oh my God, a bunch of savages in this town.
Hope they're not watching.
Who cares?
Yeah, you got away with it.
Yeah,
now.
That was me, yeah.
There's nothing worse, like when you go to a. I was at a Bills game, and there was just a turd in that trough thing.
It was, yeah. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's,
what's the statute of limitations on that?
What do you mean? Is that like, a crime, you yeah. think?
I don't know. It might
no,
be.
No, it shouldn't be.
No. No. You did it in the bathroom, at least. You did it in a field. That's public. You're the one who should be in jail.
That's true.
Well, my son did. I have a little dog, and we have like a wee-wee pad in the house in case she goes in the house. Uh-huh. And, you know, so my son at five, I was in the bedroom, and he's like, Dad, you come out here in the hallway, hurry up. And I run out there. He took a shit on the pad. I'll show you the picture afterwards on my phone with a big grin, and he's pointing at it. Yeah, just a big turd on the pad.
He's five now?
Yeah, well, he's seven, but he
seven
did it when
now.
He was five.
Wow. Man, how's he doing?
He's doing great.
You like being a dad a lot, don't you?
Yeah, he's already doing stand-up. Every night, he's like, Dad, you doing a show tonight? I'm like, oh, come on, man, do a show. Because he wants to get on stage. He's been on stage like six times.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
That's great. You encourage that? You're like, I want my kid to be a stand-up?
Well, if he wants to, yeah. He loves it because he watches. He's really good. You know, he just observes. And no, like, that was his first joke he ever did on stage about how, like, he took a shit on the pad. He's like, Dad, you got to come out. He goes, and I pooped on the pad. he goes, and then all of a sudden the dog came around the corner. He goes, that didn't come out of me. That ain't mine. Like, that was a line. Like, that's a good line.
That's great.
That ain't mine. That didn't come out of me.
That's really kind of funny.
Yeah.
So, like, what do? You just take him to a club with you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll take him to shows, and he'll watch, and sometimes he'll go on stage.
Really?
Yeah. He went on stage a couple of weeks ago in front of like 400 people.
Wow.
And he was wearing a leather jacket and he had sweats on. And he goes, I got a routine. I'm like, okay. I go, yeah. He goes, something about my leather jacket.
Did he go out there and go, hickory dickory?
No, he loves dice. Yeah. He does, but he goes, what's with these people that wear like a leather jacket and sweats? He goes, now I'm wearing it because all my jeans are dirty, but other people, like the crowds are dying. He goes, wow. I know I'm wearing them right now, but I'm talking about other people. My jeans are dirty. That's the only reason I'm doing it.
That's great.
What did you do to this kid?
Because he's really good at just watching. Like he's same with bands. Like he'll watch moves on stage right. And then he'll do the moves. Like because he does music and stuff like that too. He's really good. Like when I did that episode of Louis, I showed it to him.
Yeah.
I was on Louis C.K. He knew all the lines, but like the third time he watched it, he's doing the lines back and forth.
So you have like a little prodigy at home.
I think so.
He's making shit jokes.
Oh yeah.
Kid's on fire.
Yeah, he's great.
That
yeah.
was a great episode of Louis, by the way. I never thought Jim Florentine would make me cry. But that was actually,
you should have saw the show last night.
An amazing job.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was fun, man, doing that. You know, it was the role. It was, you know, he basically said, look, play it as comic. That's really annoying to have to share a condo with. Like, I've been doing that for 15 years. Right. I know that guy.
You've been annoying people for 15 years.
No, I've shared a condo with that guy. Yeah. That annoying guy that won't shut the fuck up and is always, you know, doing this, doing that, or whatever. So I knew how to play that role. No problem.
I'll tell you what, man. If you ever get that, if it's ever a reoccurring character and you need some advice on how to do it, call this kid over here. He's the most obnoxious person to travel with or be around. You'll see.
Really?
Spend a little more time with him.
Well, he does carry baby wipes. That's a plus.
Yeah.
It's not, though.
I have
it's
my
not,
benefits.
Though. If you're constantly stopping to shit and he's constantly, like, you're in the car driving and he's leaning over the back saying, I got to get my baby wipes. Like, it's real great.
Right.
It's a real treat.
I used to travel with this comic that had, a spastic colon or whatever, and he'd have to shit a lot.
Can I guess his name?
Yeah, you can guess.
Or the initials DR?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So
God rest his soul.
I know. So he would like have to stop at like every 20 miles on like the New Jersey Parkway at the rest area. And it got to the point where I would just start shitting too. Like he would go shit. I'm like, I might as well shit too. And then I'm shitting like three times a day. I'm like, what is going on?
Is it like when someone yawns?
Catchy, yeah. I'm like, all right, yeah, you're going to stop again? I'll stop again. I think I got
He was a good guy.
He was a great guy.
He was a great guy.
Dennis Ross.
I felt so bad. Like, I saw him towards the end a couple of times, and he really wasn't looking too good. I felt pretty bad.
Yeah. No, he helped me out a lot in the beginning. Got me a lot of gigs and stuff.
One of, like, legitimate sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah. He was great.
Definitely had a spastic collar, though. Definitely something you knew about him in the first 5 minutes of meeting him.
Yeah.
He was on Front Street with the collar issues.
But then he would also eat, like, really spicy food. I'm like, Dennis, you should be eating this. He's like, nah, I shouldn't be, but whatever.
Well, you know,
like,
I carry the Red Hot with me for a reason.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But, yeah.
Then you know you're going to pay the price for that later. Like,
yeah.
Stop eating that spicy food. That's going to come back on me.
We're all going to pay for this, Dennis. We're all going to pay for this.
Yeah.
So your kid's doing stand-up, hanging out and enjoying it. I've never asked you this, but how did you get into it? Like, at what age were you? Like, how were you exposed to it? What?
You asked me that before.
I don't believe I did.
Yeah, you did. Remember, okay. And I told you.
On the last episode of Phil Hanley.
Yeah, I don't know.
You said something like, I don't answer to you.
No, I remember the first time I met you. He's like, can you tell me how you got in the stand? I'm like, all right, I'll tell you.
I don't think that.
But happened. It wasn't on camera.
And he doesn't remember it.
Nope. Refresh my memory, Jim.
So what was the question?
The question is, how old were you when you like kind of got into stand-up?
Probably like 23, 24. I was trying to, like, I was DJing at the time. I was on the radio, and I had a radio show, and I was also DJing like in clubs. Like rock clubs, I had my own DJ business, DJing weddings and stuff. So, and once I got on the radio, I realized I couldn't say what I wanted to say. I wasn't trying to be like Howard Stern or anything,
right.
But I was just like cracking jokes in between songs. And they were like, oh, you can't do that. You just got to play the songs, so, you know, or just give the weather and that's it. Don't be funny. People don't want to hear that. And I'm like, oh, this sucks.
Yeah.
And then I just said, I got to go up on stage, you know, because I was writing material, whatever was going on, like topical stuff.
Sure.
And then once I went on stage, that was it, man. I was like, I got that one laugh in the set. None of my material. Every comic says they did great when the first time they were on stage. It's bullshit. You know, I want to hear that tape. And let's go over the tape and we'll listen.
Yeah,
I didn't get any laughs, but this one guy heckled me during the open mic. And I said something back and I got a really big laugh. I forget what it was. And I felt that freaking, I'm like, holy shit.
That's like the needle in the arm.
Yeah, that was it. That was the adrenaline I got from that laugh. I'm like, this is what I want to do.
And then you chase it forever.
Yeah.
So, like, you've had an interesting career because you've got to go in a lot of different directions. And if you started doing stand-up when you were 23, I take it wasn't what you really, really wanted to do, like, before then?
Well, I wanted to be in a band. I was always,
music guy.
Yeah, but I just didn't have the talent to play anything. I tried guitar, bass, drums, singing, all that stuff. I just didn't have it. So, I figured, I saw my friends, basically, they were all in bands, like these, and I saw all the chicks they were getting. I'm like, man, I got to get up on stage. I'm like, this is unbelievable. They would get, they would friggin',
what I need is an elevated flat surface.
Something. I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like, I was a repressed Catholic kid growing up. I didn't get laid when I was younger or whatever. All of a sudden, like this, these guys would just be practicing in a warehouse.
Right.
In the middle of the night, we're just playing cover songs. And there'd be like nine chicks hanging out outside waiting for them. I'm like, this is unbelievable. Like, that's how a lot of musicians back in the day got into it. They saw the Beatles at Ed Sullivan and all the girls screaming. They go, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So many musicians back then go, that was the moment.
Wasn't that Ozzy's thing too?
Ozzy, everybody was like, when I saw the Beatles and all those girls screaming, I'm like, that's what I picked up an instrument.
It's a powerful image.
It is. Yeah, especially when,
women passing out to see you.
Yeah.
In the 60s, if you wanted women, you either became like the Beatles or started a cult.
Yeah.
That was the two popular ways back then.
Or pretend you're a Kennedy. That's how it worked in the 60s.
Exactly. Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of weird because like you had this music, music was your thing. You realize you're not good at it. You start doing stand-up a little bit. You're doing radio. What kind of radio station was it?
Well, and it was a little radio station in New Jersey. I was on college radio. I was on the college radio station. There was this little station in New Jersey. I would do the news during my college like internship.
Right.
And then at night, you could play whatever music you wanted, but after 6 o'clock. But during the day, it was like album AOR, album-oriented rock. It was like Foreigner, Journey, that kind of stuff.
Right. Your favorite?
Chicago. Not so much my favorite. It was more metalhead. So at night I had a show where I could bring in all my heavy metal and play that. I had like a four-hour show. I could play whatever I wanted.
That's pretty cool.
And it was amazing. And then they go, look, you're good. We want you to do like the morning show. We want to hire for the morning show. It was $100 they paid me a week.
To do the morning show.
Yeah, 6 to 10. But then I had to play that stuff. I had to play Phil Collins, Susu Studio. You know, I'm like, this is fucking horrific.
What does Jim Florentine reading down for Susu Studio sound like?
I'm like, I'm trying to sneak in like an Aerosmith song or, you know, like an Ozzy ballad. And like, you can't play that. I'm like, why? It's slow. They're like, no, you got to stick with this and this. And I'm like, oh, this sucks.
That's the saddest really thing ever. Like, I just wanted to sneak in some Aerosmith.
Yeah, I know. I put Aerosmith Dream On. And they're figuring, all right, this will kind of fit. It's a slow song. Like, you can't, what are you playing Aerosmith for? And I'm like, what's wrong? That's hard rock. And yeah, but that's a ballad.
This is easy listening.
Yeah, so I go, what are you playing? Don't crack jokes like that. People don't want to hear that. So I'm like, oh, this is, so I was like, oh, fuck that. Because they left me alone at night.
Right.
When I was playing my heavy metal, they didn't give a shit. They didn't even know what it was. And
right.
So that's when I said, I got to get up on stage. And when I saw, like, Dice and Kinnison, when I was younger, you know, like bring like a rock star mentality to like stand up. You know, they had guys in bands and they were playing arenas and leather jackets and long hair and shit. I'm like, man, this is what, you know, I want to do shit like that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's very inspirational to do it, but then to actually go and do it. To see it is one thing, but to go and do it is another. Like, how did you jump on stage? Just an open mic?
Just an open mic. You know, I always worked a really shitty job too. Like, I'd cut lawns. You know,
yeah, $100 a week to play Phil Collins sounds pretty shitty to me.
Yeah, so then afterwards I have to go work. Like at 10 o'clock I get off, I have to go work. I do deliveries. Like I work for like a hardware store where I deliver like fucking mulch. And
don't forget
mowers.
To listen to me at from 8 to 11.
Yeah, and stuff like that. So, but I always worked a shitty job knowing I don't want to do this, so I better find something that I like. I didn't want to get a comfortable job. Like my brothers were in the real estate and they were making money at the time. They were buying these old shitty houses and fixing them up and selling. They're like, be part of the business. Like, oh, I don't want to do that shit. So I said, I'm going to work those shittiest jobs so I know I have to get out of this. That made me write jokes when I'm on the Lance cutting fucking 20 lawns a day. I'm thinking of shit in the van. I'm like, I don't want to do this forever. So I'd always like write material down. I have a little piece of paper. And so I got a whole act together. And then eventually I went on stage. It took me a while to get up and actually do it.
I find that very inspiring because a lot of people just like don't ever really understand where the material comes from. And it's just, you sit down and you write it. You sit down and you write it and you get the balls and you get onto a stage. It's how it's done. And it's nice to hear and see a success story from somebody who was cutting lawns and writing material and now is headlining major clubs across the country and doing television and doing all sorts of great things. It's impressive.
My nephew's 18 and he's in a band. He wants to just be in a band. He worked like 2 weeks at Domino's and he quit. So he hasn't had a job. I go, he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do for money. I just want to be in a band. I go, look, you got to go. I go, get the shittiest job. The shittiest job, and believe me, you'll be writing songs while you're on that at that job instead of doing it. I go, and that's going to motivate you to get off your ass and fucking make it in the band.
Yeah.
I said, but you're going to have to get a job until you start making money in the band, but go find something awful that you hate.
Yeah, don't get comfortable.
Don't get comfortable, because if you get a comfortable job where you're making, you know, $40,000 right off the bat and you got benefits, you're like, all right, well, this is good. I got benefits now. I don't have to pay.
Write jokes. You know, or
shit
I could
like
go
that.
To Best
and
Buy.
Then you're like, and then all of a sudden you meet some girl. I'm going to get married. I got benefits. You know, and then you're stuck in that fucking rut.
Yeah.
You know, but the problem with show business is there's no pension. There's no, at the end of 20 years, you can retire. You got money. You have no idea.
What?
You don't know what's going to happen.
You have no idea. Shocked to learn
so that's
this.
The thing. No, but that, you know, that's the chance you take.
Yeah.
You know, I was in my mid-30s, and all my friends had houses, two kids, big, you know, and I'm living in a shitty apartment, splitting rent with two other dudes. Fucking, you know, I got a little bedroom, and I'm
Who
barely...
were those two other dudes?
People I didn't know, but then I lived with Jim Norton at the time. But there was other guys, just roommates I had.
Yeah.
You know, splitting the rent. You know, it was like $900, so it was $300 a month. I was fucking living right outside of New York City. I'm like, this is what I... But I'm going to my friend's house. He's got a 5-bedroom, 3-bath, fucking 2 kids and a dog and a wife.
Come on over.
Job.
I'm grilling, Jim.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm looking around. I'm like, that sucks. I'm like,
oh,
you know.
God.
But meanwhile, I'm like, I'm living in a fucking... Like, I'm in college and I'm in my 30s. But then eventually shit started happening. But you don't know. You know, you don't know if it's going to hit.
Are you not living like you're in college anymore? I know you have a kid.
No, I mean, I got a house now, so it's a little different, yeah.
It's a little different. It's a very large
store. But I still just, you know, I still wear Old Navy and just fucking live like, you know.
Good for you.
Yeah,
I don't buy any fucking, I spend money on my kid. I'm like, I don't even have a girlfriend. I'm like, I'd rather spend that on him. I get more fun out of him than, you know, spend some money on some chick.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, why am I going to spend $500 on earrings? I'll buy him some shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I like hanging out with him.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, at night, I'm like, I like hanging out with him instead of somebody, you know, going, you know, you want to watch, you know, there's a good show on Lifetime. No, you want to watch
The Voice?
There's
never been a good show on Lifetime.
Yeah, you want to watch The Voice? It's really good this season.
Luke, how about Real Housewives? Come on, let's
watch it. You know, there's a movie, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is in. It's kind of romantic comedy, but it's not. You want to watch that tonight? No, I don't.
It's kind of this, but it's like that. That's never a good description.
It's not,
for a movie.
Yeah. It's not really. I know it says it's a romantic comedy, but it's not. Well, how many times are you going to fall and trip? How many times are you going to get fucking walk into a wall?
For Vinny, a lot. Oh,
yeah, it's always fun.
I fall a lot.
I was going to say, this not sounds graceful. Really pointed against Vinny.
Yeah, fall quite a bit.
No, like that, was it Daddy's Home too? Whatever, Mark Wahlberg and John C. I saw it in the movie theater. My son liked the first one.
Yeah.
But if you watch the trailer to that, there's or the commercial, I think it's like 30 seconds, there's four times where someone gets hit in the face, walks into a wall, and falls. Like, there's four clips in 30 seconds of that. I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Why is that? Why do people still find that funny?
Who's sitting there going, oh, this one's going to be good.
Yeah, look, he walked into another wall. Look, he fell. Look, the ball hit him in the nose.
See, well, I have PTSD with those Wahlberg's things. I start cringing. I get nervous.
Mark Wahlberg's in that. His acting range. That's about it.
Well, it's Will Ferrell, so he plays the goofball.
Yeah.
You know, so he's always falling and, you know, and shit's hitting him, you know. I'll watch that with the Three Stooges. They did it well.
Yeah.
You know.
But can you top what they did well? Like, the Three Stooges really are, like, the epitome of success when it comes to slapstick.
No, I know.
Everybody else is just copying at this point, I would say.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, that's, you know, if you don't have comedy, okay, so someone's got to get hit with a ball in the balls. They don't have a punchline, but let's do that. It's like the commercials where the white guy is always the goofy dancer, the bad dancer.
Like every Ben Stiller movie?
Ben Stiller, or just every commercial.
Yeah.
Like you get the white guy, and then like the black guy or the Spanish guys or the women are looking like, this guy, look at him, he's terrible. He's never good. The white guy's never a good dancer. But that's always the joke. Like, all right, how can we put comedy in this 30-second commercial? Okay,
white guy
in the office by a cubicle doing a goofy white guy dance and everyone's staring at him.
And they're just sitting there going, what if he falls at the end?
Or
what if we have him right at a pat
fall?
Or
just like, you know, that look. Okay, there he goes again. Yeah,
it's racism. You
know. It is. It's reverse racism if you think about it.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that commercial that Will Smith and Kevin James movie.
They did a movie together?
Yeah. And right before Kevin James got huge, like before he became his own movie star, but he's doing a goofy dance.
Okay.
You know, to some goofy song, and Will Smith goes, get out. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I'm the black guy. I know how to dance. You're white, and you're overweight, and you're being silly on a dance floor. And he just goes, get out. I was like, yuck.
I just imagine.
How come the black guy's never a bad dancer?
Carlton.
Okay, that's the only guy. But why in the commercial? Why isn't the black guy being silly?
I don't know why they don't put Carlton in every one of those commercials. He would do it for nothing.
Alfonso Rubino's not doing anything right now. He's so lonely.
Yeah, I mean, he should.
I wonder if he'd co-host this with me, Nick.
Nice Alfonso Rubino reference, by the way.
That's what I'm here for.
Where'd you meet Don Jameson?
A gay bar.
I knew it.
Was he working, or was he just hanging out?
He was just hanging out.
Yeah.
He was just hanging out.
He was working the door. No, he was working on MTV at the time. Like when I was doing comedy like 2 years, and he was like a booker for the comedy show there. And this comedian Rich Francesi that was around, and he knew Don. He got booked on the comedy shows like what was a half hour comedy hour. Then there was MTV Kamikaze, a bunch of different comedy shows, and Don was one of the bookers on there. And Rich was on, and I became friends with Rich, and Rich introduced me to Don one time at a Christmas party at Caroline's comedy club in the city. He goes, I've got to introduce you to this guy, man. He books the MTV. He goes, I think I'll like it. He went up to Don. He goes, this guy's from New Jersey. He likes heavy metal, and he likes strippers. And Don's like, really? And we sat there for like 2 hours and got drunk. He goes,
have you met Chastity?
It was amazing. Because Don was from Jersey, had long hair. He used to have a heavy metal show on like Rutgers on the college radio station. And, it, you know, he liked hanging out in a strip club. So he goes, I want to come see you because we're booking this new comedy show and I'm looking for new talent. So, like, within a week, he came to a comedy club in the city and he booked me on the show. And then I started getting other stuff from that. So that pretty much launched my career.
Right.
You seem like two guys that if no one had introduced you, the universe just would have forced it.
Absolutely. Because we're like, even Eddie Trunk from That Metal Show, when we hosted that, it was another guy. Me and Don would be driving home from gigs on Friday night, and he had a heavy metal show from like 11 to 2 a.m. in New York City where he could play his own stuff.
Right.
And we'd be driving home listening. It's like, man, we liked the same exact music. How do we not know this guy? Like, he grew up in New Jersey, and then we met him at a concert, and he's like, yeah, come on my radio show, you know, if you guys know heavy metal. And we'd sit in on his radio show on Friday night if we were off, and he's like, I'm going to pitch this TV show to VH1, and next thing you know, we're on a TV show together.
And you guys had a hell of a run. I mean, 2008 to 2015, was
it? Yeah, we had 7 years, wow. Yeah. Which is like eternity for
really
TV.
Is,
yeah.
And it really is. And what I like about it is you found, like, you had this passion for music the whole time, and then all of a sudden you get to interview some of the biggest names, heroes of yours, and talk about it professionally and get paid to do it. Like, I mean, that's rarefied air, my friend.
My whole childhood is I made prank phone calls because I went to Catholic school and I was always in trouble, so I was grounded.
Yeah.
So I just had a phone and I would just fuck with people. I'd call the neighbors. I'd order pizzas. I'd just fuck around. I made prank calls and I listened to heavy metal my whole childhood.
While you're suspended
and
from
school.
And
then little did I know I was going to be on TV shows later on in life where I make prank calls and I'm on a heavy metal show.
God, yeah. You got typecast.
It's amazing. Yeah. Like, who would have thought that this shit would have went anywhere?
Well, I'll tell you what, man. Terrorizing telemarketers could still be one of my favorite go-tos on a long car ride. I laugh my ass off every fucking time. I can't help it. It's crazy. If, for anybody who doesn't know, Don and Jim did a series. How many albums did you
six.
Do? Like six of them.
Yeah.
And they're just... The story I got from Don is that you guys just went around town signing up for every stupid thing you can and giving them your phone number and then sitting there waiting for the phone to ring with prepared bits and just tormented these people.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you saw like a gym membership at the Subway, you're like, oh, I'm signing up. You put a fake name and you just put the phone number and you know they're calling like within a day.
Right.
So anywhere you could sign up for something, we would. But then also we had guys that own businesses. A lot of guys, so we were doing calls that day, like if Don was over my house, we'd tell all our friends, hey, if any telemarketers call your business today, give them this number, tell them you're at this number, that guy, whoever they're looking for. So then they would just call our
number.
So
we'd get
a lot of calls. I was wondering how you guys got everybody to call you.
And then also we weren't on the do not call list.
Right.
So most people were, so we weren't, so that people would constantly call.
So legally speaking... If they call you, you're allowed to record it because you didn't call
them.
It's
an incoming call, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So the police kicked in your door once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's what they did, Brian.
What happened there? I didn't hear
about
this.
He pretended that he murdered his grandpa in a bathtub. while trying to renew the newspaper.
That seems like a justified response for someone trying to get you to renew a newspaper
is
to murder
a
grandfather.
No, that's not when the cops came. That was a different one. I did murder my grandfather in a tub. I did. No, they called when I pretended I was giving my girlfriend a home abortion. That's when they came.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's when they came.
Sorry we got him wrong.
Yeah, I know. Let's get the record. Let's get it straight here. You know what I mean?
I'll try harder to do better research next time.
Well, because that call never got released.
It wasn't the fatricide. It was the,
no, that call never got released. What I had my friend Chuck Miganelli, who's a comic, and I had my girlfriend at the time there, and I said, look, just start screaming in the background. And we had a vacuum going, too, and the woman called. She's like, what's going on? She's like, ow, ow, and vacuum. She's like, what? Like, oh, my friend just gave my girlfriend a home abortion. She's like, oh, my God. You want me to call back? I go, no. No, I was looking forward to you calling whatever she was calling for.
See, that's the brilliance of these calls. These people aren't allowed to hang up on you.
I know. So I go, no, it's a good time. I was actually looking for a mortgage. My friend said he knows what he's doing. He's got a tool chest here, a toolbox, whatever. I don't know. Just keep going. And yeah, and
I would just be in the background yelling, hey, give me that screwdriver.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's like, I got a pace. What do you want me to do next? I'm like, just keep going. Just get everything out, all right? Whatever. And she's like, oh, my God. And then she hangs up and she had my address right in front of me because this is my credit card company. And then she called the local police and said, oh, my God, there's something going on at that house.
Oh, my God.
You guys come home. You guys are out, right?
We went out to get coffee. My girlfriend's like, you're a fucking piece of shit. So you're going to hell. And when I got coffee, came back like an hour later, my door was busted because they thought there was a home abortion being performed up there. And the door was locked. And they were like, it could be a woman bleeding up there. So they kicked my door in and locked it down.
Where can people still get Terrorizing Telemarketers? Is this on iTunes? Because I bought it a long
iTunes,
time ago.
It's on Spotify, all that stuff.
Yeah, really check that out. I mean, they're definitely worth it. They're very
that
funny.
One never got released though because the audio wasn't good. We didn't do a dry run.
Sure.
So the vacuum was too loud, so you couldn't hear the woman. It was just too much. So yeah. I wanted to. So I could never release it. Plus, I got in trouble and all that shit.
There aren't a lot of dry run at home abortions. I don't.
It's
think.
True. Like, you got to get it on one take.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even tell my girl. I said just scream like you're in pain. I didn't want to tell her exactly what we were doing because I knew.
Oh no.
Said,
no!
Oh god!
So I wasn't gonna get a second take with her. I'm like, can you do that?
This is an ex girlfriend, I assume.
Yeah.
God, that's hysterical. Listen, check that out immediately. But Crank Yankers, you did after that. Like, I mean, I assume that it was kind of like, hey, this guy's good at prank calls, and they probably heard Terrorizing Telemarketers.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And they
Well, Howard Stern started playing the telemarketer tracks,
right?
And then he had me in. Like, he's like, man, I like this stuff. So I was a guest on the show at the time, and then Crank Yankers came along. Right about the same time after he started playing the shit.
You get a lot of heat for the special ed character?
No, because that was in 2002 to 2006. People weren't fucking uptight like they are now.
Yeah.
If that character came out now, I'd be fucking America's Most Wanted.
You really would.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. People would be going crazy. But no, people like understood it, you know, there's jokes.
And the character kind of started on Terrorizing Telemarketers, if I'm not wrong. Yeah.
Yeah.
They just kind of like... adopted it into
well, I called him retard, you know, but then they go, we can't call him retard.
Yeah, so probably not.
Yeah,
probably
special not. Ed. I'm like, oh, you're gonna change his name? Because I got to the point with the telemarketers, they wouldn't get off the phone. I'm like, man, what am I gonna do? You know what I mean? Like, they still will just
they don't give up.
So then I said, I'm gonna start acting like a retard and let's see if they'll still try to sell me stuff. So that's I started doing that, and they were still stayed on the phone. I'm like, holy shit. And then they heard that character. Correct.
How many of these scumbags are going, I could probably sell this guy three?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No, I remember they were like, this woman wanted like, she wanted like $25,000 for an investment. I'm like, yeah, I got a lemonade stand. I think I got like 75 cents. Yeah. You're going to need more than 75 cents. I'm like, oh, I just got another quarter. I got a dollar. How much more do I need? Yeah, it's fucking stupid.
See, that was the great part of that character. It was just always like, how much more now?
Yeah, how much more? Yeah.
It's very funny.
So, yeah, so then when, Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla were guys behind Crankmakers.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were big Stern fans, so they heard my calls. They go, we want this guy on the show. I was the first unknown on that show. Everyone was pretty, you know, Dave Chappelle, Sarah Silverman, you know, Tracy Morgan, Jimmy, Adam. You know, Jimmy and Adam had the Man Show at the time. So I was the only unknown comic that was on there. Like, who the fuck? Wanda Sykes, Dane Cook.
Yeah, that's
all
a big
them.
Deal.
So it really helped my, you know, my career just went skyrocketed from there.
That guy's show, you know, people say whatever they want to about him. His show is immensely popular, and his fans definitely.
Who's?
Stern.
Oh, yeah. No, I do. When he was on regular radio back in the day, 2001 is when I got on there.
Yeah.
It was huge. He was huge in every market.
Yeah.
That was, he had about, he went to Sideline, 06, something like that?
06, yeah.
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 Interesting. And listen, I did not even want to talk about this, but somebody yelled Robin Quivers at you last night. Does that happen a lot? I know you dated her for like a couple months.
Yeah.
People, they don't leave you alone about that.
No, whatever. I mean, I'm used to it. They yell Crank Yankers out. That was, you know, 2002 the show started.
Yeah.
You know, so I play off it.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get too upset about it. But
no,
I mean,
people
like, like, how often do people walk over you and be like, hey, Robin Quivers?
Yeah, I mean, a lot because, you know, there's still Stern's really popular and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so the people are like, oh, man, you dated Rob. I'm like, yeah. You know, no, I don't mind it. I just, I don't go, yeah, I did. I know. Wasn't that great? I just kind of try to make it uncomfortable.
Do you think people
I go,
gonna...
what do you want me to say? So, yeah, I dated her. I don't know. What from there? You know, you make it uncomfortable. I'm like, what do you want me to say? Yeah, we dated for 10 months. We're not together anymore.
Do people go up to you, like, expecting a high five? Like, they're going to walk up to you and be like, Robin Quivers. Like,
well, so, yeah, they would get that. Or people like, how big was her tits? Oh, my God. You know, I'm like, you know.
Well,
I don't know.
How big?
Well, you know,
answer the question, Jim.
Well, you know what? When people used to do that, like when I was dating her and I'd do shows, and guys would come up that were, and they would come up with their wives, like, how big are her tits, man? Are they nice? And I'm like, well, how big are your wife's tits? Like, what, dude? What? I go, no, you're asking me about my girlfriend, so I just want to know about your wife's tits.
Right.
Are they real? How big are they? Are they nice? How big are they? You know? I'm like, that's fucked up. I go, you just asked me.
Yeah.
I throw it right back at them. Yeah.
But you were on the stage with the microphone. I can ask you whatever I want.
It's probably the best way
or
to handle it.
Or this would be after the show, like even when I was like selling merchandise, people come, dude, how big are her tits?
Classic.
Like, how's your wife's pussy? I was just curious because, you know, you're asking about my girlfriend's tits. Like, I'll tell you, but you tell me how her pussy is.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, if you're in entertainment, people think that it's okay to ask you shit like that.
Yeah. Which is fine, but it comes with the territory. It's no big deal. I get the same thing with that metal show. If I said, you know, AC/DC, Highway to Hell is my favorite record, I'd get guys coming to the show, how the fuck could you say that Back in Black was way better? I'm like, okay, well, whatever.
It wasn't, but okay.
What do you want me to tell you? You know what I mean? Okay, if you think Back in Black's the best one, then that's fine. I like Highway to Hell. Whatever. So, you know, I just can't believe you said that. I'm like, dude, whatever you... It's okay.
When you're doing that metal show and you are just, you know, a huge metal fan the way that you were... Were there any interviews in particular that, like, freaked you out or people that were coming in where you were just like, I can't believe I'm getting to talk to them?
Well, yeah, pretty much everyone, yeah. I mean, we had Angus Young and Brian Johnson, Marilyn Manson, you know, all the guys from Sabbath, Tony Iommi, Geezer Butler.
I would lose my mind to talk to Tony Iommi, I think.
It was amazing, yeah. It was amazing. Rudy Sarzo, and we had Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. I'm a big Tom Morello, you know, Rage fan.
Oh, he's one of my absolute favorites.
Yeah, Rob Zombie, Alice Cooper. So every season was somebody different. I'm like, man, I can't remember Sammy Hagar. We had Michael Anthony. So it was great.
So you got to pretty much do, like, the things that you really were into when you were a kid professionally.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel complete after that, or do you just have, like, another path you want to explore? Like, do you feel like it's a part of you just says, man, I really did, I made 10-year-old me really happy?
Yeah, no, I know. It's been amazing. You know, you never know what's going to happen in your career. You just kind of just keep plugging away, and all of a sudden, okay, this opportunity's here, I'll do this for a while, whatever, so.
You're doing a lot of acting. Like, I see you in a lot of stuff, just, like, you pop up in different shows.
Yeah. No, that's great, too. I mean, you know, people are like, you want to do more of it? I'm like, yeah, I'm not turning down stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going, I don't want to do that role. Yeah, if it comes along, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you never know. That shit, you know, sometimes it happens, then you think you got something going on, and then it doesn't. So, but the stand-up is always a thing to fall back on, which is great.
Sure.
I love doing that. That's my, you know, that's my favorite thing to do. So if nothing else is going on, you do the stand-up.
I feel like it's very impressive that you've been able to take your career on this arc of, man, I had these passions, I got to do them. You've done TV. You did Trainwreck. You were in the movie Trainwreck.
Yeah.
You've been in a lot of different things. Like, have you tried pitching for shows? Like, have you tried to write stuff?
No.
Really? You haven't, like, just maybe tried to make your own thing?
No.
Maybe ice dancing?
Ooh. No, I don't watch TV, so I don't even know what's going on. And, you know, if anything, mine was going to be, it's going to be edgy. And just to get something made is just, I don't know. I don't have any ideas for that stuff.
Okay.
You know,
you just like doing the character acting and.
Yeah, whatever. If it comes along with the stand up, you know, I like being my own boss. And it's like, it's going to, it takes 5 years to get anything just to the table. I'm not good at kissing ass, you know, like in Hollywood and stuff like that.
Right.
It's just like, it's all bullshit. You know, so, no, I haven't done any of that.
All right. I'm just curious, because I feel like, you know, I see in so much stuff that people would probably listen if you pitched something.
Yeah, they'll listen, and they'll go, this is what happens. You go to Hollywood, you can have the worst script in the world. Your neighbor could write it that's never wrote anything.
My neighbor's an idiot.
And you get into a meeting, and they go, this is amazing. Oh, my God. We're looking for stuff. We're looking for a show just like this. We're looking to start up, like, 4 new shows with this network. This is unbelievable. I think this is perfect. Let me just bring show our other guys in the office here that are out today. But I really think this is a go. I think we could do this. Are you willing to locate to Los Angeles? Yeah, of course. Probably have to shoot out here, and then you never hear from them again. Yeah. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
They won't even return a phone call. I think you'd be perfect for this. Adam Sandler's got a new movie. I think you'd be perfect as a sidekick. Oh, my God, this is perfect timing. You came in here today. never acknowledge it again. You know what I mean? And anyone,
what a country.
Yeah, exactly. One out of 100, you'll go, okay. And then all of a sudden, like Chappelle was probably in like 3 or 4. I think he had like 6 pilots before he got the Chappelle show.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like you never know with that shit. So if all of a sudden that metal show, the guy at VH1 is a big metalhead. He grew up in Buffalo. What the fuck was his name again? Tom something. He was a DJ.
I didn't realize that.
He was a DJ on the radio, the rock station in Buffalo.
Interesting.
He ran VH1 Classic. He was a big metalhead. We pitched this show. He goes, I want this show. Our first episode was with Lita Ford, who had one hit back in the day, Kiss Me Deadly.
Yeah.
Runaway.
But in the Runaway, but also in the Runaway.
Whatever shit. And that was our pilot episode. We interviewed Lita Ford. What TV show would pick up a fucking, you know.
I don't know. Lita Ford these days, I'd probably watch the interview. She's a little off the rails.
No, I know. But just that, like, that was our pilot episode. He goes, I want this show. He guaranteed us 2 seasons right off the bat. But that was a guy that was into heavy metal. We pitched this show. Goes, I want a heavy metal show on VH1 Classic. So you never know when it's going to work and when it's not.
You're just like maybe in the right place at the right time for some of this stuff.
Yeah, you never know. Sometimes it is. Like Jim and Adam were the Man Show. The Man Show was a huge hit. And they go, we have this idea for this prank call show. And they go, okay, we're going to guarantee you 6 episodes right off the bat. They didn't have to do a pilot because it was so popular.
That had to be kind of expensive to produce because you have to get puppets made.
Yeah, and then there's an actors, you know, I mean the puppeteers, and they have to build a set and a director and all that shit. I had the easy thing. I just made the prank call, the audio.
Right.
And then they took the audio and Rudy created a whole thing, you know, with that. But they were hot at the time. And then all of a sudden they were big Howard Stern fans and they heard my shit. So,
right.
And they're like, we want this guy. So I didn't even have to audition for it.
Oh, nice.
So you never know what's going to happen.
When you're doing 4 more shows here at the Carlson, I should probably say that. You get your tickets at carlsoncomedy.com. See Jim Florentine tonight. I'll be performing there as well, which is kind of rare. I don't do that many weekends, so I'm kind of excited and happy.
Why is that?
Just because I live here in this town. I don't want to do too much stuff.
Right.
Because then, you know, people don't come and see as much.
That's true.
He's a very busy man.
Yeah.
Oh, very busy. I fall down a lot.
Right.
I got a lot of meals I can't miss. There's things I have going on.
All the emergency room trips take up a lot of his time.
I fall a lot.
It is fallen season out there.
It's fallen season.
You do the goofy white guy dance, too.
When I get, yes. Yes, always. That's how I fall most of the time.
Loudly.
People throw balls at my balls. It's just a terrible being made.
So pratfalls.
And no one ever films it. They'll
no
never find
does.
Me.
Yeah.
That's really my passion, and no Adam Carolla's or Jimmy Kimmel's have discovered it yet.
Right, well,
his falls only exist on security footage.
So come see Jim Florentine this weekend. Your stand-up, Jim, your approach to stand-up is not necessarily considered nice. It's a little, you're very direct, but you're direct about the simple, annoying things in life, which I find to be the funniest material because it's very, very relatable to most people. Do you find it hard to win over like somebody who doesn't know who you are when they come into the show? Like, I know you have a lot of fans that know you from that metal show and they know you and they come to see you because they know your style. But people who don't know your style, do they walk out like surprised and happy? Usually, like, man, this guy was good. I dug this.
I don't know. You know, I like doing shows in New York City because most of the crowd doesn't know who you are. They're just coming to see a show.
Right.
And then you really know if your material is good or not. Like, you perform in front of your audience, you never really get a gauge because they're already on your side.
Right.
You know, so they're ready to laugh and that, you know, they might amp it up a little. But when you do shows where people don't know you, that's when you really know if the stuff's good.
Right.
Like, usually, the rule of thumb, like, if you, on a scale of 1 to 10, if your joke gets a 6 in New York City, you could bring it on the road and it'll get, like, an 8 or a 9.
Because
that crowd doesn't know you in the city. Most of them don't. Some
yeah,
do,
just
whatever.
A good barometer.
But you're getting, so if you gets a 6 there in front of your crowd, it'll get, like, an 8 or a 9.
Interesting. Interesting. So, like, when you're preparing, you know, for, you know, a new hour or whatever it is that you're doing, you're working on stuff. New York City's the place to work it all out, huh?
You can work it out on the road, too. It depends. But, yeah, New York is a good place. Or, just, you know, I'll go to little clubs or I'll even go to open mics if I have to, you know, and work it out. Or sometimes I'll just try to work it out on stage, you know, and see. And I always record all my sets just to, you know, in case I do some new material or some new stuff pops out and listen back and, you know, if I'm doing new jokes. But, yeah, a lot of times in the city, like on a Wednesday or Thursday night, there's 20, 25 people in the crowd. And that's where I'll just really work on some new shit and see. You know, I'll listen back to it. I'm like, all right, the wording's not right and all that stuff, and work it out like that.
So do you actually, do you set time aside to write? Like,
no, I never do. I've never done that where I just open a notebook and I start writing. It's just when it comes to me, I just write it down.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, all right, I could probably expand on this.
I've always felt it's counterproductive. It's just this, like, for this 1 hour, I'm going to stress myself out.
Well, you know, some people are disciplined like that. I think it goes back to when you were in school. Were you disciplined when you did your homework? Were you disciplined when you needed to? Me, I was waited to the last second. You know what I mean? Just to whatever, cut corners, whatever way I could do. I don't want to. But other people are just focused. No, I got to do this. And they're very organized. I was never like that. So I think that... But it works for me. I write it down, especially with like an. Used before it was like, you know, cue cards, a little index cards. I keep in my pocket with stuff on it. Now with the iPhone, with the notes section, it's great. It's right on your phone.
Yeah.
So you just put it right in there, the idea, or you could put it in the voice memo. You could just talk it in. Yeah. I got an idea, and I'll just talk it in instead of writing it out.
How? Just for my own curiosity, how many times do you try a joke in one of those small rooms or an open mic before you take it into like a big room? Or a big stage?
Once, or sometimes two or three times, if it's getting some laughs, and then I'll try it. And, you know, usually I do it earlier in a set, because it seems like your hone stuff, the stuff that you know works, can't follow your new stuff.
Sure.
Like, if 30 minutes into your set, if you're trying new stuff, the audience can kind of feel like, this isn't, it's not really that tight. So I don't know, for some reason it doesn't work.
Sure.
I try to do it early in a set, within like the first 10 minutes, because I know the other, it can't follow the stuff that I know is going to work.
Yeah, right. I've always felt like if you start doing new stuff later in the set, people start thinking the show's kind of over, because they're he's done all the funny stuff, now he's just going to mess around.
Right, he's messing around, and they're like, wait a minute, this isn't like tight like the rest of the stuff was. You know, set up punch, now he's kind of like drifting off, and he's kind of... So I do it early, and if it doesn't work, I know I can follow with something, no problem. Yeah. I stick it in early, and then I'm like, I can move on from there.
Any sage wisdom or advice you'd like to pass on anybody thinking about trying comedy?
No.
Good for you. I'm with you.
No, I don't know.
Just no, don't do it.
Just get up and do it, you know, and just get on, you know, get on stage as much as you can.
I'm just disappointed about the pension thing. I thought,
and don't do it for the money, you know what I mean? If you're doing it for the money, forget it, get out.
Yeah,
that's good. Very good advice right there.
You know what I mean? And if you're lucky to get a college, get booked for a college, you're doing comedy like 2 or 3 years and you get $1,200, the next night you're working for $25 and don't fucking bitch about it.
There it is.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, yeah, you got a nice payday there, but you got to go back and slum it in the clubs or the open mics or a bar gig or whatever it is.
I don't think people realize what a grind it really is. It really is like you have to take the work where it is when you're starting out.
It's like going to the gym. You got to be in it. You got to be, you know, if you're 4 or 5 days a week, whatever, just go work out. It's the same thing. It's like work, you know, you got to keep doing it. You know, and you can't just get, you know, just because you got one big gig. You know, Bill Burr wants you because he's doing the arena here in Rochester, and he wants you to open because he heard good things about you.
No,
the
he
next,
didn't.
The next day, you're going to be playing in a friggin' bar. You know what I mean? They might not shut the TVs off because the Sabres are in the fucking playoffs.
Yeah,
and you got to deal with that shit.
If you get a
get it too big of a head. Just, you're going to have to go back in and
you get a corporate gig for $2,000. That doesn't mean that's your going rate now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then you go to the comedy club, go, no, well, I got $2,000 to do 30 minutes.
Yeah, we don't give a shit.
Okay, well, you're getting $100 a show.
Yeah.
Too fucking bad. That's what we pay. Yeah. I'm not doing that. Okay, so there's going to be a million other guys that are going to take that slot.
There's four other people sitting there waiting for a spot to open up.
Yeah. No problem. I'll do it.
Three other guys at the bar.
Yeah, so just don't do it for the money. But, you know, it's tough because sometimes you get to a point like, what am I doing in my life? I got nothing. I'm living fucking, you know, paycheck to paycheck, basically. And I don't know. It's not steady work. So you don't know. So.
Right. Well, man, I got to tell you, it's really been good catching up with you. I'm looking forward to doing 4 more shows with you this weekend. And
We'll talk some Dolphins.
We will talk some Dolphins.
If you guys started on the Dolphins, I was going to start a clock and say you had 5 minutes. And then you had to stop.
Because you have that authority around here. Because he has the authority.
We can get it done in under a minute. They're terrible. They will be for a long time. And they got no quarterback.
I'm glad you're realistic anyway.
By the way, Mark Ippolito will back me up. I cried laughing at something you said in your set. I don't want to give away a joke. But when you were talking about Dan Marino and Jim Kelly being friends. Oh, yeah. And you're just like, they're just looking at each other going, yeah, this sucked.
Yeah. because I was saying, about, yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm in Rochester and I got this joke where I say something about I live in the moment. And I'm like, that's bullshit. I don't live in the moment. I go, I'm a Miami Dolphin fan and I'm still crying that Dan Marino didn't win a Super Bowl back in the 80s. I go, I think about that every day, so I don't live in the moment. I'm like, man, if he had a running game, if he only had a defense. But I knew, setting that joke, I would go, oh, fuck, I'm in Rochester. If I say I'm a Miami Dolphin fan, I'm not even going to be able to get that line
they
out.
Boo the
they're
going
to boo. So I'm like, shit. So I had to stop mid-sentence. I go, wait a minute, I can't even say this. Like, almost like, oh, this is a little rough. And then I had to do it. So even tonight, I have to change that joke. I have to tell them early in my set that I'm a Dolphin fan. Let them get the booze out of the way.
Yeah.
And then, but I can't do that joke just like I, because
yeah.
when
well,
I do I it
think
in
somebody
Pittsburgh,
yelled, Jim Kelly didn't win one either.
Yeah, I know. You go, yeah, I go, no, now they're friends now. Yeah.
yeah, they're friends now. They both go, yeah, it really sucked.
Brilliant. But, yeah, so I had to stop myself with that joke because I know what territory I'm in. But we're all in the same boat in this, you know, with the AFC East.
Yeah.
Until Tom Brady and Belichick retire, no one's got any shot at winning that division.
So I can't say anything else.
Right, so no one's got a shot at winning that division. So don't, you know, just know that.
Let's all just be friends for now until the competition can start again. That's pretty much how that works.
Because I don't even there's no rivalry between any of the teams in the division.
No.
For me anymore, because the Dolphins, Jets, and Bills have been bad for so long.
Yeah.
And the Patriots, like, how do you even get mad? That's like the best comic in the world. That's like Louis C.K., Bill Burr.
Right.
Like, how am I going to get mad at that? They're fucking way better than me.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to be jealous and envious. I'm like, fuck those guys. They suck. No, they don't. You know what I mean? So as a comic, you just like, okay, well, got to wait it out.
So if you want to see a comedian who's not as good as Louis C.K. or Bill Burr, come out tonight to comedy at the
see why he's a, yeah. See why he's a dick?
No, it's true. I love him.
I know. It's funny. It's just the way you put it.
Yeah. But that's the Patriots and Bill Belichick. You got no shots. It's just fucking, you know, just when you think you might, oh, if I win this game, like Buffalo was it last week with the Patriots. If they win, they were pretty much in the playoffs. And, you know, you can't fucking beat that team.
And Brady's just going to stick around until he's 45.
Yeah, exactly.
There's some voodoo there. There's some fucking voodoo going on in New England, I think. That guy's playing so well at that age. It's just, I don't know.
Well, they're going to be, you know, just know when he retires, unless they have a, they're going to be 3-13 for the next fucking 5 years. And Belichick will retire the same year Brady.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
retires.
He's going to, he'll be out the door first.
Well, he knows.
He's like, oh, Brady's retiring.
Because that ruins
retiring.
His legacy. Once he retires, if Brady in 2 years goes, I'm retiring, Belichick's going to retire at the same time because then you got a new quarterback coming in. They're going to go 4-12, and they're going to go, well, if he didn't have Brady, he wouldn't have won all those games.
There's be a
so you get out at the same time. And Belichick's 65 years old, so he's not going to coach that much longer.
Yeah.
God willing. I could see him sticking around for a year after Brady, just to kind of see what happens.
He's going to go 4-12. That's what's going to happen. I would
probably
get out there
so.
And go, I don't want to expose myself. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably
and,
right.
And who knows? They might draft a guy in the fifth round who's another fucking unbelievable like Brady. Or Brady
yeah,
I think
watch every
the
quarterback
yeah.
they draft in the sixth and the seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been this week's episode of the Carlson Cast. Thank you,
so we
Nick.
Only talked about the Dolphins and the Patriots for 4 minutes.
Yeah,
not bad.
We got, yeah, that's good.
We talked more about the Patriots than the Dolphins.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, there's not a lot. He was right. It's just garbage. That's the end of our show. Thank you, Jim Florentine. Four more shows. I'm looking forward to it. Brian Ball, adequate as usual.
Thank you.
Nick Levastro, great job.
Thanks.
All right, let's get out of here. Thank you. Good night.